Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Saima Mahmood. Saima is Software Development Manager at Oracle. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show, Saima. It's really good to have you join us, and I can't wait to kind of delve into this topic with you.
Hey, Ben. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to discuss things too.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics to discuss on the show, and we're going to be talking all things diversity and inclusion in the technology space, and, you know, talking about that a lot. But let's get into the conversation to start with. Could we get a brief background of your career history and in technology and how you got to where you are today?
Of course. So I graduated in media technology and digital broadcast. This is a long time ago now. And then I joined a graduate program doing performance testing. So that's where I initially started. And that was for a year and a half, and I absolutely hated it. I mean, there was lots of kind of programming, and that's not my forte at all. And so once I left, I joined another consultancy as a functional tester, and that was a lot more enjoyable. And I was kind of exposed to a few different industries as well. I quite enjoyed working alongside like lots of really knowledgeable people as well at different levels. Mm. Once I left that, I joined a couple of other quite large multinational companies, and it was the second large multinational company that I joined where I joined and the team hadn't done any kind of retros or anything like that in about 6 months. So when I joined, it was, I think it was like week three. And I said, are you guys not having a retro this sprint? Yeah. They said, oh, we haven't had one in a few months. So I kind of took it upon myself to start organizing these things and, you know, taking on a bit of a scrum master hat and facilitating a lot of these meetings. And then I was very fortunate enough to gain the scrum master qualification as well.
Well,
and become certified. Yeah, so that where I was working then, I was very fortunate that the company were supportive and allowed me to do that. So I managed to get that under my belt and became a bit more active in kind of doing that. So while I was there, I kind of went through a bit of a rocky period in my personal life as well. I mean, I lost my mum that year. This was like 4 years ago.
Wow.
And then 6 months later, I had to have an operation as well. And it, you know, there was a lot of things going on, and it changed my perspective a lot on things. I felt a little bit stagnant as well in where I was going. So I started to kind of apply for different types of roles as well, because I thought, you know, like I said, things are quite stagnant in my career at the moment. Mm. And then I got offered an opportunity as a full-time Scrum Master at a startup. So this was, it was a challenge for me, because not only was I going into a full-time role as a Scrum Master, but I was also jumping into a startup as well.
I've heard some quite extraordinary things about some startups. Is it kind of full-on all the time until, you know, God knows hour of the night all the time? Is it really like that in startups?
Some can be. I guess it depends on personal experiences as well. Where I was, I mean, I was surrounded by such a great team there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were all supported each other. And, you know, there were times where you'd get a message, you know, crazy o'clock saying, this has gone down, we need to fix this. But when you're in such a small organization like that, you know, you kind of have to have that expectation of, you know, getting messages like that. So because there's no kind of broader structure to look after things, because it's very early on in its development as well, you're going to get teething problems like that. And, you know, systems are going to go down at, you know, 12 o'clock at night, or, you know, if a customer's trying to order something at, you know, 3 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon and you're out having lunch with friends you know, you've, I was very fortunate to work with such a diverse group of people there as well. And that was where I learned a lot as well. And I think that was one of the places where I shifted my focus as well on converting, I don't know how to do this, into this is a challenge for me and I will learn how to do this.
Yeah.
And it made such a big difference and had such a big impact the way I not only learned things, but how I progressed in my career as well. So following on from that, I left in the middle of the pandemic, which probably was not the wisest thing to do because I didn't have another job to go to. And, you know, so I had a few months off, a little career break. I had other plans for that, but obviously the pandemic stopped any kind of traveling or anything like that. So during that time, I got back into self-development reading as well quite a lot. Mm. Like I managed to get through 24 books last year.
No way, really? Wow.
Yeah. I tried to do that this year as well. But I think when you've got a full-time job and other commitments, it becomes a little bit tricky. But audiobooks are key because, you know, you can listen to them in the car or while you're cooking. But yeah, so, I mean, I try to do that and work on myself a little bit more as well, you know, with because I think with certain roles that you have, like senior roles in tech, you have to be able to deal with different types of personalities and people. And it's so imperative that as a manager or someone that's going kind of towards that kind of role needs to be able to understand and interpret the needs of different types of personalities. So, you know, for me, I think doing that kind of self-development and reading helped me to identify how I could personalize my communication with different types of people.
Sorry, Sam. I was just going to say it's really interesting because I speak to a lot of leaders and managers on the show, and I never really realized before I was doing these interviews how much kind of inward looking managers have to be to realize who they are as people, and how empathetic managers have to be across a whole board of different individuals. So I just find it fascinating, and it's really interesting that you have that kind of self-development driving you, and you, that's how you learn and better yourself as a manager. It's really interesting, but please carry on.
I mean, it's so, so important because, I mean, I can only be a good manager to my team if I'm constantly bettering myself. I mean, it's all well and good for me to tell my team, you need to do X, Y, and Z to, you know, get to a certain place, but for me to be able to be a good person and a good manager to them, I also need to up my game as well, so to speak. I mean, yeah, during that time, I was doing a lot of kind of self-development and reading and trying to implement these kind of tactics in my personal life as well, because, I mean, that also helps.
Yeah.
And then I decided to do a personal training course.
Really? Wow.
And so I did that all online, and I managed to get past all my theory for that. And then amazing. I got offered the job at Oracle. So that had to kind of be put on hold. You know, when you think about people in tech, you'd never think about all these different types of other things they do outside of tech.
Yeah. Could you just give us a bit of insight into Oracle, just in a nutshell, what that is as a service?
Currently, I work as a software development manager for Oracle, and it's under the Oracle Data Cloud contextual products and services. So Oracle is one of the largest database companies globally, and we acquired a startup back in 2018 called Grapeshot, which is a brand safety marketing provider.
Mm.
So the purpose of the business here is to create solutions that allow for a brand's safety by crawling web pages and using information retrieval processes to identify the core content of what's on that web page. So this content is then compared to something we call contextual segments, which are sets of carefully compiled words and phrases that cover specific topics. This then defines whether there's a match against these terms and phrases and how strong the match is. So this information is then processed by our customers, who are able to decide on whether a page should be negatively targeted or positively targeted. It's a very complex technology that works on web pages, on desktop and mobile, and the use of the contextual intelligence technology in the processes is mainly to identify what the core content of a page is, and then to translate that into a method of improving brand safety and ad targeting for our customers.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It sounds like you definitely got your work cut out for you there as the software development manager. I don't know where you'd begin. but I mean, in terms of like diversity and inclusion in technology, I mean, one of the global tech leaders, I've got some statistics here. One of the big tech giants, we're not going to name them, otherwise we might get in quite a bit of trouble. But it wasn't Oracle. It's just very important to mention that. So some of the statistics are they had 37% of their workforce was female, 73% of their workforce was white, 12% was Asian, and 8% Latino and 8% black. So now, with those statistics, I'm just really interested to find out why do you think we're still behind the curve with diversity in the tech space? Because you'd think that in 2021, especially how much technology has come on, you'd think that we would be so far advanced in this area, but I just don't think we are just yet. I mean, do you have any thoughts as to why that could be?
Yes, that's a great question. I mean, you know, having a chat with one of my direct reports who's also a female, and she's very, very early on in her career. And I thought it'd be good to get an insight into what she thought as well, because I wanted to compare it with what I thought like 10, 15 years ago now. That's showing my age a little. But, you know, it's a good comparison to make, because then it allowed me to kind of see as well how things have changed over that spectrum of time. And it's really funny because she kind of said the same thing as I would have said as well. So a lot of women may not feel skilled enough because a lot of these roles are dominated by older men.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of female, there's not a large percentage of females that dominate the executive team members. As women, we can find that quite intimidating as well, you know, being in a space where there's not a lot of space for women to kind of progress into that kind of career. So it kind of makes you automatically think, this is a role for men. I don't have a place there. And I think that's just kind of carried on across the years. And I feel like there isn't enough being done to make everyone feel like the tech space is suited to them either. I mean, improvements have been made, but sadly not at the pace that they should have been made over that period of time. And, you know, it's such a shame because there's so many talented, you know, not only females, but people of colour as well, that have the ability to be in certain positions. And it's just a shame that they feel they're not entitled to be in that place, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think as well, something that doesn't help is that if you look at the tech leaders in the public eye these days, I mean, we've got like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and I can't remember the names of the other ones, but they're all just one demographic. They're all like a white male.
Indeed.
Powerful businessman, you know, certain age. The tech leaders are all that one demographic. There's not enough role models from diverse backgrounds.
Definitely. I mean, I think sometimes your brain also automatically just adjusts to what currently is available and or what you're seeing. And I think because we're so used to seeing these kind of figures in high positions, I think sometimes now we automatically assume that that's the yardstick almost. And because we're not used to seeing females in that position, I guess it's just become an innate thing now to not really think about that so much. But I mean, it's something that really needs to be pushed, because when you start unconsciously thinking about these things as well. As a female, you know, if I saw another female doing really well, it would motivate me so much, so much more than seeing a middle-aged man of, you know, English ethnicity. I think any kind of success in that form is always motivating for me. But it would reach that extra bit further if I saw a female, you know, or a person of colour kind of reaching out there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is, you know, for tech as a whole, as an industry, but in the workplace, you know, how do you think we can promote diversity and inclusion in the workplace on a smaller scale and try and close that diversity gap?
Okay, so I think there's a number of ways, because companies benefit from higher employee retention if they're committed to diversity and inclusion. I think incorporating small measures such as ensuring there's designated prayer space for employees of all faith is just one example of increasing inclusion here. I think identifying and acknowledging celebrations as well of all faiths, creating a culturally diverse calendar that shows festival of all faiths as well. It can help to educate people and ensure clarity as well when it comes to booking time off. Because I think sometimes that could be a bit of an issue as well when you're trying to book some time off for, you know, specific religious festivals.
Mm.
And I think getting to know colleagues as well on a personal level.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, so important. I mean, I've made some really good friends over the years that have all had different cultural backgrounds to myself. And I think that's partly due to the fact that I've worked with less than a handful of females of the same background as myself, but it's pushed me out of my kind of comfort zone and, you know, get to know these people of different faiths and backgrounds and, you know, ethnicities. And it's amazing how much you can learn from these people as yeah. well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think in this day and age, say if someone went into, you know, their first day at their new job, and, you know, the workforce when they meet the wider team was just like not a diverse workforce at all. That I think a lot of people would see that as quite a big red flag. And, you know, in this day and age, you just don't expect that, do you?
Yeah, you really don't. I mean, I would find that quite concerning as well. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it would be, obviously it's not good to make assumptions or judgments. And, you know, it's, I think spending a few days within that to try and identify why that is the case would probably be a good idea. And getting to know the team and, you know, I guess understanding why that is the case is probably a good way of doing things. But yeah, definitely, I think that would be quite concerning if I came across something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And also a lot around this is to do with, you know, recruiting and hiring. And there's all sorts that surround this, even goes down to the way you write the job advert. Yeah, how can you attract all people from all backgrounds and all diversities, essentially?
So I did a little bit of research, and the UK tech sector was growing at 6 times the rate of the wider economy before the pandemic started. So yeah, there's lots of opportunity out there. And I think it's just a case of employers marketing these opportunities the right way. So I think things like blind CVs, where you remove the candidate's name and any information that will identify their gender or background from their CV, you know, is taken off. So essentially it's the removal of demographic characteristics. You know, that can help in, you know, hiring without bias. I think rewriting job descriptions as well, so they're gender neutral, that's definitely another way of kind of promoting diversity. And if an organization wants to be competitive, it needs the best people for the jobs that it has. And they're not all going to come from one background or gender.
Exactly.
So I think for a company to set diversity goals as well, which are unique to the organization, will definitely help them to track progress too. Having cultural awareness, asking questions, you know, kind of educating yourselves. I mean, one of the initiatives we have at Oracle is that all new employees take unconscious bias training as part of the onboarding. And it's kind of mandatory training that you have to do. And I just feel like it helps new hires to understand that diversity and inclusion is imperative.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so vital as well to have something like that. Because even, you know, I learned so much during that as well. I mean, I think it was just a few hours long, but I think having initiatives like that as well really takes that step forward.
Yeah. And it's the message that sends as well as the actual training. It's not just the training that's important. It's just, it shows that the business is thinking about it and does see it as important.
Definitely.
So you mentioned earlier having, you know, different role models in the public eye in the tech space might help inspire different demographics to work in the industry if they see people similar to them really succeeding in technology. But what else do you think we can do to inspire that next generation of all demographics to work in technology?
I think this is so important. I mean, this is such a good question. I think, so with some research that I did, I found in a recent survey by the Institute of Coding, 70% thought that the sector is run by those of white and British ethnicity, and 34% thought that there were unequal opportunities for women.
Right.
So, I mean, this gives quite good kind of grounding for understanding what the younger generation thinks. So, I mean, initiatives like, there's a company called the EY Foundation, which has a 30% target for placements for Black young people. I think initiatives like this are such a good helping hand in driving a diverse workplace. Also on October the 11th, it was the International Day of the Girl. So this is an international observance day declared by the United Nations. And one of the things that Oracle's committed to is breaking barriers and helping develop and empower girls in science, technology, engineering, arts, and maths. So
yeah, wow.
This used to be called STEM, but now it's called STEAM because you've got the arts as well.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this is to help increase diversity in our industry. And the United Nations stated that this year's observance was digital revolution, not without girls. You know, this is one of the things that we work to do, is to create a talent pipeline for the future of youth as well, with diverse backgrounds, perspectives and abilities. And I just think it's so important to invest in the education of girls and young women and people of colour across the globe as well, too, because you've got to start and put those foundations in early on to make sure that, you know, the next generation are aware of all of the opportunities that they have available to them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I had someone on the show a few weeks ago, and they said there was an anecdote which they said where they had a group of like probably about 10, 7 or 8 year olds in a classroom. I think they were his son's friends or something. And he said, "Draw me what you think an engineer looks like." And every child drew like a big man with a big boots on, a hard hat, and some kind of like welding tool or like a hammer. And I just thought that was so interesting that even at such a young age, that's the stereotype that they already have of engineers. Isn't that crazy?
It really is, because I think I feel like it's a kind of culture now that's being ingrained in to think a certain way of, you know, how a certain roles should be and what kind of person should fit into these certain roles. And I think that's what puts people off, if they feel like they don't conform to these personality types or these, you know, this image of what this particular role should be like. And yeah, I think that very much puts a lot of people off in choosing a career in, you know, certain fields.
So I want to talk about workplace culture for a little bit, because that kind of bleeds into this area as well. Mm? And how does that impact the retention of employees?
Okay, that's a really interesting question. So, you know, there's research that's been done that I found on LinkedIn, which showed that one of the main reasons why someone would leave their job was due to concerns over a lack of opportunity or not being able to advance their career. Mm. So career growth and clarity is, you know, one of the things that are needed to achieve this, and usually a clear path and what's required as well to move to the next level in your career has to be clearly defined. So I think that's one of the things that would help with, you know, kind of retention of employees. Also, there's research as well that's shown that 75% of boards in the tech sector had no BAME members. So BAME is Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic. And usually these members, usually no one, only made up 8.5% of senior leaders.
Wow.
Going back to the point again of, you know, having a role model or someone that's in a senior position, you know, it kind of inspires the younger generation and I guess people, employees in levels below as well, inspires them to kind of look up and see that they're able to achieve that as well. There's also research from Tech Nation as well that showed that only 22% of tech directors are women.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Again, I think, you know, trying to increase the diversity there as well can help. And one of the initiatives that we have at Oracle is network building and reverse mentoring. So we've got members of the BAME demographic of employees. They mentor senior managers and highlight their professional and personal experiences. This not only benefits the managers from experiencing a greater understanding of cultural differences, but the impact it has on their employees and just the greater sense of awareness of sensitive topics is brought into place as well. Mm. And, you know, aside from helping to increase dialogue and communication as well between colleagues. Yeah, I think just creating an environment that allows employees to feel connected to the company and other employees as well, you know, is a massive contributing factor, and embracing diverse viewpoints too. There's another thing that I'd like to touch on as well. So allowing people to choose what they wear to work as well, as long as it's not offensive. You know, I mean, obviously in some places you'll have to wear a uniform and that's fine. But without getting too political, you know, there's been a headscarf ban in certain countries, and that would deter so many talented women from applying for certain roles. And I think no one should feel like they have to compromise such a fundamental part of their belief that ultimately wouldn't affect anyone else, because it's just a piece of cloth covering their hair.
Yeah.
You know, and in order to get a job, you know, I feel like they shouldn't have to do that. Having things like that, or a company that allows people to practice their faith in that sense as well, you know, it can have such a big impact on an employee.
Yeah, it's just inclusion, isn't it? And I think that's probably the main part about culture is inclusion. You've got to feel like you belong in the business. And all those points that you mentioned there can definitely help with that. Essentially, I think it's just giving people more freedom to be who they are as a person. But why wouldn't people choose a career in tech? What are some of the reasons for that?
Okay, so female IT workers earn on average £3 less an hour than their male counterparts.
Really?
Yeah, just more research thrown in there.
Yeah.
So if you put this into salary terms, it's the difference of being on £50,000 and £55,000.
Wow.
Which is a 5K difference.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, enough to put some people off as well. You know, again, I think the tech industry has always had a reputation for a lack of inclusive culture. And that's not helped either to kind of involve people from all different types of backgrounds or, you know, genders as well to want to choose a career in tech.
But what do you think we can do to change that? And what can you do to get more people involved in taking a career in tech?
Again, I think having more role models of different backgrounds, more female role models. I think maybe going into schools and, you know, talking about the kind of work they do, but not people that don't fit the typical stereotype that everyone has of people in tech. And just, you know, kind of showing the younger generation that, you know, that because they don't fit the stereotype, it doesn't mean that, you know, they can't have a certain role. I think workplaces as well, you know, trying to incorporate different types of inclusivity as well with the International Day of the Girl. I think more exposure like that to tech and, you know, kind of increasing knowledge and awareness of it is definitely something that would really help the younger generation to become not only more interested in things like this, but also more willing and, you know, have a greater chance of them pursuing a career in tech.
But just to kind of debrief, how far do you think there is still left to go with this until we can sit here and go, it's all great now? Or do you think it's an ongoing battle?
Oh, it's definitely an ongoing battle, because in the, I'd say, you know, I guess 12 to 15 years that I've been in, you know, I've had a career in tech, I've seen slight changes and slight improvements. And over that period of time, I would have expected to see, you know, a much bigger change. Fortunately, change is happening, but unfortunately, not at the rate that we'd like it to be happening at. And I think some of the things that we've spoken about today, if most companies or, you know, a large proportion of companies try to implement these things, and, you know, as individuals as well, if we try and educate ourselves a little bit further on, you know, certain topics and, you know, just try and get to know our colleagues a bit better, you know, I think things like this, all of that will help to bridge the gap between where tech is currently and where it needs to be in terms of diversity.
Definitely. Some really nice final words there, Saima. Thanks so much. And keep up the amazing work you're doing. And yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure talking about this.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to catch up maybe next year sometime, see what your thoughts are then. If anything's changed before, we'll see. Who knows?
Well, give it a few years, I think, before, you know, we have major changes. But yeah. Here's to hoping.
Yeah, exactly. Well, keep up what you're doing. You're definitely doing your bit. And we'll be in touch soon. And yeah, thanks once again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.